The Guardian.
One day, we may make contact with aliens. And what else would you talk about to aliens other than physics? And if you want to talk about physics, the first thing you have to do is you have to agree on a set of units. And if you say, our unit of mass is based on a lump of metal that we keep in Paris, we will be the laughingstock of the galaxy.
This week, we're blasting off into the wonderfully geeky world of metrology, the science that governs how we measure things. Metrologists like Stefan Schlamminger, who you just heard, are gearing up to modernise how we measure the kilogram and three other units, the ampere, Kelvin and mole, and the community is going to a vote in November this year. It's been said to be the biggest shift in metrology for around 70 years, which is why Stefan, a physicist at the National Institute of Standards and Technologies in the US, calls this upcoming revision the Halley's Comet of metrology.
This is a rare occasion where everybody's in awe and is excited to see it. And metrology is usually a discipline that's not in the forefront of the news. So it's kind of nice to see metrology be propelled in the forefront and being exciting and shiny, just like Halley's Comet.
You're listening to The Guardian Science Weekly. I'm Ian Sample. Stefan, tell me about this upcoming vote. What's it all about?
So the upcoming vote, which will be held on November 16th, is about revising DSI. And DSI is the International System of Units. It's a French acronym. That's why it doesn't make sense in English. But DSI will be changed from a system that's based on 7 base units to a system that is based on 7 defining constants, fundamental constants of nature. If the vote is positive, the new system of units will get into effect on May 20th, 2019, and that is exactly 144 years or a dozen years after the original convention of the meter was signed.
We'll come back to Stefan in just a moment, but first I wanted a little bit of history of this so-called convention of the meter. I spoke to Fiona Orty, head of communications at the National Physics Laboratory, who also works for the International Bureau of Weights and Measures, for a brief blast through the past. Fiona, what was happening in mid-18th century France that led to all of this work around defining particular units, the meter, the kilogram and such like?
Probably the same thing was going on in France as was going on in many countries, which was there wasn't a standard unit of measures that enabled them to trade successfully, especially trading across borders. So lots of countries had their own systems, but it didn't allow us to trade internationally because other people didn't have the same system. So it was Louis XVI that decided that he should set up a small group of people to come up with a new system of measures which would allow people to trade. And it was that really was the foundation for the decimal metric system.
So that was very good of him. What did he decide to do? How did he decide to set out and do this?
Well, his specialist group, which were a collection of eminent scientists, they proposed the creation of 2 standards of mass and the length. The mass, which they also nicknamed the grave for some macabre reason, was defined as a litre of water at ice point. But in 1799, 2 Platinum standards were made, one for mass and one for the metre, and they were deposited in an archive in Paris. And this marks the very first moment we had a kind of international metric system.
So what is the convention of the metre, or the metre convention then?
So the metre convention is the moment in 1875 that 17 countries from the original Committee of 30 all signed up to say that they were going to accept the metre and actually the kilogram and the second as their formal measurements.
Wonderful. And we've all been happy ever since. So what will it mean if this vote... That's bonkers. The way we measure mass today is still based on a lump of platinum iridium held in a vault in Paris that next to no one has access to. But if that international prototype kilogram, or IPK, has been under lock and key for over 100 years, how have I been weighing stuff in London?
Even today, if you measure something in a grocery store, the scale can be traced back some way or another to this IPK, this international prototype of the kilogram, that's kept in a vault somewhere outside Paris.
You've made me realize that maybe I'm missing something in how we currently measure mass. I mean, if I'm going out to buy a few kilograms of bananas, for example, what am I actually doing if the kilo is actually in Paris?
So the easiest way to think about this is think about an old scale that you know from physics textbooks or maybe from antique stores where you have two pans on each side. On one pan, you put the bananas, and on the other pan, you put the reference mass that has a kilogram on there. It says this is a kilogram. So if the balance is now balanced, you know that your bananas weigh a kilogram. Now, how do we know that the kilogram weighs a kilogram? So you are in the UK, so what will happen, this kilogram will be sent to different calibration laboratories, and they calibrate against their laboratory. And at some point, it goes to the National Physical Laboratory in Teddington, and it will be connected to the National Prototype Kilogram. That National Prototype Kilogram is a platinum iridium cylinder, just like the international prototype, but it is designated to the UK. And the designated kilogram.
Well, we didn't have the budget or permission to get our producer into the Parisian vault, but we did manage to wrangle access for Jeff to visit the home of British metrology, the National Physics Laboratory in Teddington, to see the UK's designated kilogram.
My name's Stuart Davidson. I'm the science area leader for mechanical metrology here at the National Physical Laboratory, which is the UK's national standard laboratory.
And you, I believe, have one of these copies of the international kilogram prototype here at the National Physics Laboratory.
Yeah, exactly. At the National Physical Laboratory, we've got the official UK copy of the international prototype kilogram, and that defines the mass scale for everywhere around the world. And we have copy number 18 of that IPK. And we send it back to Paris every sort of 30 years to be checked against the international standard. Okay, so what you can see there is held in under a bell jar, and it's hermetically sealed, and we have filters to make sure the air is as pure as possible inside there. It's not kept in a vacuum. And what you can see there is a relatively small cylinder of platinum iridium held in the case.
So this is actually the UK's most perfect kilogram?
It's the kilogram in the UK with the smallest uncertainty, yeah. So we know its value to within like a few micrograms. So it's the thing that gives traceability for all weighing in the UK is ultimately traceable back to this standard.
So I take it you don't get it out of this setup, out of this casing very often?
We tend to get it out once a year when we check it against all our other platinum iridium standards. This sort of highlights the problems with having an artifact-based standard is you're very much reliant on what the standard is doing and what your interpretation of what the standard is doing as well. So although it's always defined as weighing 1 kilogram, we know intrinsically it's not always 1 kilogram because all the copies are changing. Therefore, there's nothing to suggest that the IPK should be ultimately stable. And it's very much reliant on the protocols of the BIPM as to how well they can maintain that. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we noticed that there was a big shift. Well, a big shift, I say, at 30 micrograms, which for metrologists is a big shift in the international prototype. So there was a lot of readjustment of the world's mass scale had to go on amongst all the national measurement institutes around the world.
For someone that weighs, 80 kilograms, could you put 30 micrograms in context for me? Because I don't usually deal with that sort of scale.
Okay, that's fair. 30 micrograms on a kilogram is 2.4 milligrams on 80 kilograms, which is about the weight of a grain of sugar. So it's not going to affect how much you weigh. But for scientists doing sort of very precise research, for example, in pharmaceutical companies where you're weighing very small amounts of very important active quantities of drugs, then even small changes can be significant. And if we can't rely on the values of national measurement institutes, then the whole scale becomes slightly suspect.
So, even if it sounds like a trivial amount, this unstable artifact has lost the trust of metrologists. So the community has decided that it's time to bring the kilogram into the 21st century.
Over the last, 20 years maybe, scientists, particularly those with units that are defined by artifacts like the kilogram, have been looking for ways to realise these units with relation to fundamental constants. So about 30 years ago, the meter, which used to be defined as a meter bar, went over to being defined by the speed of light. The four remaining quantities which needs to be redefined will be voted on in November as to whether these redefinitions will actually be accepted by the worldwide metrology community. All the science has been done, so as scientists, as metrologists, we're happy that we're in a position where the fundamental units can be redefined. But politically, all the countries need to get together and agree that they're happy with this fundamental change in the basis of how measurements are made.
You're listening to Science Weekly from The Guardian. After the break, we'll delve into the particular fundamental constant chosen to define our beloved kilogram, plucked straight from the weird and wonderful world of quantum mechanics. And then, just for badness, we'll question fundamental constants' constantness to ask whether all of this is worth it.
If those fundamental constants would be varying, that would actually mean that the laws of nature would not be the same.
We'll be right back.
Brexit Means is back after an extended break for an in-depth look at where the process might go next, if indeed it goes anywhere. With Britain due to leave the EU in less than 6 months' time, no solution yet in sight to a hard border on the island of Ireland, no clarity whatsoever on the future relationship, and tempers starting to fray on both sides of the Channel, join me, John Henley, as we ask, can the government's Brexit plan ever really happen, and what if it doesn't? Just head over to guardian.com/podcasts or search for Brexit Means on your favourite podcast app.
Hello again and welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Ian Sample. Before the break, we heard about the problems of defining our unit of mass, the kilogram, on an unstable block of platinum iridium, and the metrology community's desire to upgrade our measurements to be based on a fundamental constant of nature. These are physical quantities of our universe that are thought to stay the same over space and time, things like the speed of light or the gravitational constant. And the time is nigh, according to metrologist Stefan Schlamminger. He has spent the last 7 years of his life, along with numerous other researchers around the world, pinning down a precise number for one of these constants.
Yeah, so the fundamental constant that we're going to use is called Planck's constant, or little h. The way to see this is very analogous to the meter. The meter is defined via the speed of light. So the meter previously was a 10 millionth part of the circle from the pole to the equator. And people also made an artifact. It's called the International Prototype of the Meter. It's a meter bar that had two scratches on there, and the scratches were a meter apart. And at some point, people could measure the speed of light, which is a fundamental constant, more precisely than they could read off the scratches on the meter bar. And then people say, why don't we turn this around and say the speed of light is a fixed number, and we call a meter as the distance that light travels in a 300 millionth of a second. Okay, I'm rounding now. It's not exactly 300 million. It's 299, blah, blah. But you get the idea. Instead of using an artifact, use a fundamental constant of nature. And that was a big change in 1983. So you can do the same thing with Planck's constant. So Planck's constant is a number that is measured in joule seconds. Okay, it has the value 6.626 times 10 to the minus 34 joule seconds. Joule is the unit for energy. And if you zoom into this, if you write down the joule in base units, you will see that there's a kilogram and a meter and a second in it. So you have something now, h equals a numerical number, and then you have kilogram, meter, and seconds. Once you know the meter and the second, you can use that equation to define the kilogram.
Can you give us some understanding of what the Planck constant is? So I understand how you can use it to now define the kilogram. What actually is the Planck constant, though?
So the Planck constant is a very interesting thing. So it is the defining or the most important constant in quantum mechanics. And one way to see this is, imagine a child on a swing, all right? If you have a child on a swing, on a classical swing, that child can have any energy. It can be just resting, sitting on a swing without swinging at all, or it can swing whatever amplitude you want it to swing, right? And you can give it a little more or less energy. The same is not true in quantum mechanics. If you had a child on a quantum mechanical swing, it can only have discrete levels of energies. And these discrete levels are given by the frequency of that swing. So if you have a normal swing in a playground, the kid might swing back and forth in about 2 seconds time, let's say. And in a quantum mechanical swing, the energy would be given by h times f. So f is that frequency, 1/2 seconds. And it can only have discrete values, and it cannot have zero energy. So this is how a quantum mechanical system works. And h gives the energy scale of any quantum mechanical system. And that's why it's a very important constant in quantum mechanics.
So that's what Planck's constant is. But we've known about this constant for more than 100 years. Why are we only making this leap now?
The idea of redefining the system of units based on fundamental constant dates back to 2005. So it's like a 13-year-old idea. But at that time, people could not do it because the quality of the data that we had, the number that we thought Planck's constant is, wasn't precise enough. There was scatter between results, there was not good agreements, and so forth. And in 2014, for the first time, we had good agreement of the three best measurements worldwide. And then people say, oh, like, look, it looks good. I think we can go forward with the redefinition. But people wanted to be extra sure that everything works. So we did a trial redefinition just amongst a few people or a few national labs. We pretended that there would already be the new system of units. And we all had a mass weight. And they sent to Paris and they compared the masses. And that trial worked out really well, too. So in 2018, there was enough data. There was two more experiments that came online. And the agreement between the data is reasonably good, so we can take the plunge and make that step. And fundamental constants are something that are built in our universe, and everybody has access to them because they're just in the fabric of the universe. You need to construct the right scientific apparatus to use them, to measure stuff with them, and then you have access to it. So that, I think, for me, completes that historical arc that starts out with having the foot of a monarch to a system of units that can be used by anybody on Earth. And also if there are societies outside Earth as well.
It really is a lovely thought. Our beloved kilogram can become truly democratic. Anyone can measure one out, provided they have the right equipment, and there'll be no need to reference an obscure lump of metal hidden away in a metrology institute. Perhaps ironically though, since the IPK will no longer be the definition of a kilogram, the kilogram itself now gets its own uncertainty. But physicists are okay with that, because we have a fixed number for the Planck's constant.
My name is Wim Ubachs. I'm a professor of physics and astronomy at the Free University in Amsterdam.
Or do we? Some of your work looks at this question of whether the fundamental constants of nature are truly fixed. Isn't the point of constants that they are actually constant?
Yes, that's of course so. And in fact, it means that if those fundamental constants would be varying, that would actually mean that the laws of nature would not be the same over time.
So how do you look for signs that these fundamental constants might actually be changing over time?
So we did measurements in our laboratory, and that's how we started, with lasers. We did precision experiments on molecules. And those precision experiments tell you what the quantum levels in the molecule are, and those are dependent on some of the fundamental constants, like Planck's constant and other ones. And in particular, they're also dependent on some dimensionless constants, so just on the number. And an important number for us is the proton-electron mass ratio. And those determine actually the spectrum, the absorption spectrum of the hydrogen molecule. That is the smallest molecule that is found in the universe. And that one can study in the laboratory. But fortunately, we can also study it, this molecule, as it was in the cosmological history of our universe. Because we can see these hydrogen molecules at a distance, of about 10, 12 billion years, light years from us. And that means we're looking at those same molecules that were very old. And we can also look at the same spectrum. And we can compare the spectrum, so at which wavelengths light is absorbed in the laboratory now and as the molecules were 12 billion years ago. And of course, that you do on a big telescope, because you have to peek into the history of the universe very far away. So it has become an experimental issue, not just a theoretical issue, because you can measure them. Now, we come to the conclusion from comparing these spectra of molecular hydrogen, as they are measured in the laboratory, and in these quasar absorption spectra, that the change of the proton-electron mass ratio has been less than 5 parts per million. That's what we find now.
5 parts per million doesn't sound an awful lot.
Well, that's just how you look at it. It could be 5 parts per billion or 5 parts per trillion, which is a million times less.
Is there any way of being able to get a more precise handle on this, a better measurement, or are you now at the limit of your instrumentation?
Well, I would say the spectra that we measured in the laboratory with our lasers, they are exact for the purpose of comparison. The limit is in the accuracy that you can get from the astronomical data. So what we need is actually a better telescope and a better spectrometer and also good calibration procedures. And people are working on that. For example, now the European Southern Observatory, which is a European organization, is building the so-called extremely large telescope in Chile, which has a much larger disk and which will give us much better spectra. But this will only become operational in 2022 or 2023, so we have to wait for that.
So if there is this possibility that the proton-electron mass ratio, one constant, may have changed over the history of the universe, is it also possible that Planck's constant, which will be used for redefining the kilo, is it also possible that that may have changed over these eons of time as well?
Yes, that is very well possible. But in our research, we specifically look for dimensionless constants, so just numbers that are at the base of the structure of matter, because that is a purer way of looking at it. But if those dimensionless constants, like the proton-electron mass ratio or the fine structure constants, would change, then also Planck's constants would change. That would be a consequence of that.
What would that mean for this redefinition of the kilo?
Well, if fundamental constants would change, then all the definitions would change over time, and also including the definition of the kilogram. But as of now, we haven't found those phenomena yet, so we can still live with the definitions as we give them.
Just finally, Wim, I'm interested in whether it's viewed almost as heresy to question the constants of nature.
Oh, yes. That has been the reaction of many of my colleagues, and particularly also in particle physics here on the corridor. People have viewed, my colleague physicists, that the fundamental constants of nature cannot change because that is so baked into the theory of physics, and if that would change, they would all be in trouble, and so that can actually not happen.
But you're saying there's wiggle room.
Well, yes. I mean, let me put it this way. It's not just a fundamental theoretical issue. It can be... It has become part of experimental science, and you can measure whether it had changed or not. By ever more precise doing measurements, not only doing the cosmological comparisons, but people nowadays are looking with atomic clocks, but on a much shorter time scale, but much more precise, and they're also looking into this problem.
So there you go. Our remaining SI units are hopefully about to get the 21st century makeover metrologists think they so desperately need. And this new, truly universal set of units, and the ensuing cosmic street cred that Stefan assumes would come along with it, will mark the end of a dozen years of work to democratize the way we measure things. Unless, of course, physicists like Vim manage to point a bigger and better telescope at some 12 billion year old part of the cosmos and spot a major discrepancy. But that feels unlikely. Special thanks this week to Stefan Schlamminger, Fiona Orty, Stuart Davidson, and Wim Ubax. If you want to find out more, we'll include links in the episode's description on the Guardian website. If you want to get in touch with the Science Weekly team, email us at scienceweekly@theguardian.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Ian Sample. See you next time.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.